Welcome to Across the Mic with Julie Otaku. I'm your host, Julie Otaku. This is a podcast about blackness and its many intersections ranging from politics to fashion, music to activism, academia to art, sex work to healthcare, and so on and so forth. Guest appearances from professionals in their respective fields will provide insight and unique perspectives to the issues discussed. Sit back, listen, laugh, think, and consider new perspectives as you join me across the mic. Joining me today is Tracy Edwards. She's the Long Island Regional Director of the NAACP, Dix Hills resident, mother of three, grandmother of three, breast cancer survivor, and all-around dynamo. Welcome and thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. It's an absolute pleasure. Now, the most basic question, what got you into public service?
You know, my parents were public servants. My father was the first African-American police detective in Suffolk County.
Wow.
My mom always was a community servant, rounding up all of the kids and taking them on trips and fighting on their behalf with anything that needed to be done. So community service was mandated in my parents' household. I started as a candy striper for Huntington Hospital, 13 years old. And that really took me on a path of making sure that whatever I did involved the community and giving back to because of the blessings that I have received in my life and the importance of ensuring that collectively we are fighting for a more just world.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I was once upon a time a candy striper. They call them junior volunteers now, but
I occupied
the same post, so I can relate to that. That's awesome. After you became a candy striper, how soon after did you start eyeing like a more prominent role, like public office? When did you first foray into that arena?
Well, I started off really working with the PTA. Mm-hmm. And then
In which school district?
In the Elwood School District, right here in town of Huntington. Mm-hmm. And then I subsequently ran for the school board, and I stayed there 10 years while my children went to those schools, my three children.
Wow.
And I retired as vice president in the year 2000 when my youngest child, my daughter, graduated, because I knew it was important to pass that baton to people who had children in school. Mm-hmm. It's important to be able to just sit in the stands and hear what's really going on and listening to the kids and the parents. I think it makes you a more effective school board member. And I loved doing that. That was, and that really was my next step into becoming a public servant.
That's incredible. Now, with you holding that position while your kids were going to school, were you then able to see, you definitely had a different perspective on like what the school system looked like. Were you then, did it make then make it easier for you to advocate on their behalf?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and it's not just about advocating for the students. It's advocating for the teachers and also the community, you know, at large. It's working in partnership is really what it should be about, and problem solving. That makes you the best type of public servant, is to ensure that you know who your constituents are and that you are listening. You know, what I find, unfortunately, is elected officials tend to have their own ideas about what needs to be done, which is great. But we have to make sure that we are listening to the people that we are representing and then altering our opinions based on what they need.
Absolutely. During your tenure, what were some of the issues that you faced once as a parent and then you were able to address as a school official?
You know, it's the same now as it was before. It's balance. You know, it's making sure that the students have balance, You know, this coronavirus, horrible virus that people are going through and what the schools are struggling with is about balance now. So, you know, it seems like we've come full circle on making sure that we are taking care of each other. You want your children to be in a learning environment, but you also don't want them to just be totally stressed, and you don't want the teachers to be stressed, you know, either. And, you know, even though that we didn't have the virus, you know, back then, family, school, work-life balance is always an issue.
And how were you able to juggle that, the home life, life now kind of in the public eye as a school official and then one as a parent?
Well, I had a great support system, you know, and my husband had much more flexible hours. So he did all of the transporting to the Girl Scouts and the sports teams and picking up the kids after school. You know, so it even makes you realize how hard it is for parents today, because if you don't have a two-parent household, or you may even have a two-parent household, but you're both just working and working and working. Mm-hmm. So it's hard, you know, and I also had my mom to help out as well. So it it's that whole, it takes a village. It really does take a village now, especially now. In order to do so, I had that great support system because not only was I on the school board, I also worked full time. So it's a lot. And I feel for parents now, especially now, because the economy is so crazy and people are working two and three jobs just to survive. And it's difficult times right now. I'm looking forward to New Year's Eve like I've never been before, just to put this chapter behind us somehow.
Yeah, I think we're all going to be bawling when Auld Lang Syne comes on. I know why.
Oh, I know. Me too.
That song is going to carry a different weight this year.
It does. Absolutely. A lot of people have been lost. A lot of jobs have been lost. A lot of struggle and stress and pain. For everyone, not just because of the virus, but, you know, also with the social justice issues that still remain. You know, we still haven't fixed these issues. They're still right back in our faces. And if we don't attack it with data and policy change and procedure change, all we're going to do is go right back in the do loop and not fix the systemic inequalities and racism that we need to say out loud because they exist here on Long Island.
That's so true. Long Island is, it is like really almost, oh, what's the expression? It's almost like the home plate of inequity. It's really like zone zero or whatever it's called. And Long Island, as some may or may not know, has had a long history of overt de facto and like legal segregation and just a whole lot of racial strife and social issues. The suburbs were born here on Long Island in the town of Levittown, if people don't know that. And you had African-American war veterans who came back from war, helped build these homes only to have it be illegal for them to purchase or occupy said homes, and they had to go elsewhere. That same racial inequity is very much visible when you go to a place like Hempstead and then you drive 5 minutes and now you're in Garden City and it's completely different.
Yeah, you know, and I think people think about that in a singular piece, like it was only Levittown.
Exactly.
And not that these communities all across Long Island had covenants and restrictions in their deeds that prohibited African Americans and, you know, other people of color to purchase their homes. So we shouldn't be surprised that we have so many different villages and so many towns and so many different school districts. You know, it was really a systemic workaround for Brown versus Board of Education.
Yeah, it was very intentional.
You know, yeah. And also this housing issue continued until, you know, 1968, fair housing. And by that time, you know, the communities have been built already.
Yep.
So you can't, you know, unring the bell, you know, and that's what I think that we've been trying to do over the last 40 years. It's difficult. But I think, you know, it's either people have forgotten or they never knew. So you have to keep educating people and making them aware of how we arrived at how we are today and how it's the tipping point that all of these things have come together this year.
Yeah, we're truly at the precipice, and that perfectly coincides with your work with the NAACP. How long have you served with them? And have you been an active member?
I think I've been probably in my 20th year almost as regional director.
Congratulations. You know, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's great. We have a dynamite state president in Dr. Hazel Dukes, and we have 10 branches here out in Long Island who are volunteers and just doing the blocking and tackling on behalf of the, you know, the communities. So I just, you know, try to be the cheerleader, help them as much as I can, support them as much as I can. But it is, you know, I've had the benefit of not only being on the school board, but I was on the planning board in the town of Huntington. So I got to, and I was the chair. So I got to oversee a lot of the housing developments, and then was on the town board for one term as councilwoman. So, you know, I can see things from all sides of the issue. And then, you know, working in the business world, I retired as region president of Verizon in 2015. So it's given me an opportunity to look at things very thoughtfully, very thoroughly, and from different sides of the issue.
To contextualize that to Long Island, with all that has happened, and I hate that overarching, like just blanket statement, but that's really the only way to speak on it without addressing every single instance of whether it's police brutality or racial inequity that we've seen come to a head this year. But with all of that's gone on, and that has gone on, how have you seen Long Islanders react to it on whatever side of the political spectrum? How have you seen that people interact with all that news?
You know, well, I think that I have mixed feelings, because I am happy that there were so many people, so many young people, so many people of different colors, genders, races, religions, that have said, we have to fix this. You know, it's enough. But we still have a lot of resistance.
Indeed.
And it still has to be a fight. And you're even fighting with the people that are supposed to be representing you, your elected officials, because some of them have forgot why they are there. And they make decisions based on how best it's going to fit their political ambitions, as opposed to the communities they serve. You know, and police reform is a perfect example, where you had the governor put in the executive order, you had the senators and assembly take those votes to have some really strong bills. But at the end of the day, you still need Suffolk and Nassau County legislators and county executives to change the actual work rules and policy and procedures so that it eliminates the racial disparities that affect everyday people on the street. So you have to follow it all the way through. And we've been fighting this, you know, since June. And are we moving the needle? I'd say we're moving the needle further in Suffolk than we are in Nassau.
Yeah, Nassau's, they've got a stronghold over there.
Yeah, and they have elected officials that, you know, just last week we only have three minority legislators.
Mm-hmm.
And the vote to hold up the PBA, well, it was really the SOA contract, went down on racial lines, 16-3, to approve mm-hmm. that SOA contract for 8.5 years. How can you negotiate 8.5 years later? You know, so we're right back again dealing with, you know, these very painful issues, but we have to keep fighting it. We have to, because that's the only way that we're going to be able to make it fair for everybody.
I fully agree. And for listeners who don't understand what the SOA contract is, would you mind explaining that?
So that's the superior officer's contract. So there are multiple, within the police department, there are multiple bargaining units. So the PBA contract will cover the police officers' uniformed policing. Superior officers are then in the leadership, mm-hmm. and they have separate contracts.
Got it. And how does the legislation that was just passed affect regular civilians?
Well, what it has is any bargaining unit,
mm-hmm.
if you want to change work rules, and if you have a contract that protects you, which you should,
mm-hmm.
you have to negotiate. So if the public wants to have a civilian review board, as an example, or they want to change any type of other responses when there's mental health calls, mm-hmm. 911 calls, that is going to require negotiation. So why then would the county executive and 16 legislators approve a 8.5 year contract that's been sitting dormant for years anyway, before we put in police reform? And they're blocking out any real chance, because now, if we do want to make those changes, it's going to require the approval of the union to say we are willing to open up the contract to mm-hmm. further negotiate. They didn't have to do that. They should not have done that. And, you know, to have the vote go down racial lines with the three minority legislators who represent communities of color, to me, should sound the alarm for people that we have a lot of work to do still. And we don't have the people that you think would be supportive of making things better for all communities are not all aligned.
Mm-hmm. That's change, really distressing.
Change is hard. It is.
That's really distressing, because that is a massive piece of legislation that's going to affect not only us, but at least one generation after.
That's right.
And most people don't know that just happened. I didn't know about that till just now.
Right.
So how do civilians remain engaged and get engaged with all of this legislative action that is taking place? Because it seems so much of it happens behind closed doors, and we just deal with the repercussions, or we hear about it afterwards, and then we throw our hands up and we're like, wait, how did that just happen? Like, I didn't know about this. Nobody told me about it. And it seems to be done almost intentionally. And considering how malicious some of these legislations and the lack of action really is, it's harmful. It's literally violence, because the people who will suffer from it are those who do not benefit from the legislation passed.
It's true. And, you know, and I think, you know, people like me who are visible and vocal and mm-hmm. have the information have to do a better job of communicating it so that, you know, people are aware of what's going on.
Yes, I think I think you're doing an excellent job, whether it's on social media, the newsletters that go out from the Long Island branch of the NAACP. Like, you are already doing an awesome job of keeping us informed. It's just a matter of people remaining engaged, because I fully believe a lot of us have become disillusioned with the whole system.
Sure.
We're probably exhausted and just fatigued with just the constant need to really quarrel and bargain for our basic like liberties and almost rights to live. Like, we just want to be able to exist free of scrutiny, unwarranted scrutiny, and just be at peace and fully comfortable, because it's difficult to find a space on Long Island as a person of color, as a Black person, where you feel fully comfortable.
That's right.
Because even if you're in a town that you feel comfortable, the police force probably doesn't reflect the community you occupy. And I had heard this from somebody who actually served in the police force. I forget for which precinct, but it was here on Long Island. And they told me, if you score higher on whatever aptitude test they give police officers, you end up out here on Long Island in Suffolk. But if you score lower, you end up in Nassau or the city. And that to me sounded ridiculous. The validity of that is, I would like for a police officer to tell me otherwise, because if that's the truth and they're just importing and exporting these officers based on intelligence or lack thereof to communities they don't even occupy, that is beyond insidious.
Well, I'm glad to tell you that that is not accurate.
Thank God, because I'd been hearing that long enough where I'm like, are you serious?
Yeah, no, that's not accurate. Okay, it's there are three separate tests.
Okay, beautiful.
Depending on the jurisdiction. And many candidates take all three tests. Mm-hmm. And they may end up on a list. And depending on what they scored, you could be placed, you know, your name could be called earlier in one of those jurisdictions just based on where you scored on the test and how many officers that they are hiring. But it's definitely not as you describe, which is the good news, right?
Yeah, feel so much better. Oh my God.
But listen, there are some scary stuff that happens, but that's not one of them.
Okay, beautiful, beautiful. Because here I was thinking for the longest time, like, oh, they're only sending the smart cops to Suffolk and then they're sending the quote-unquote dumb cops to Nassau. Like, that to me rattled my brain for the longest time, especially around like March, May, and June, when everything was just at a fever pitch and you had droves of people protesting. I forget, what's the name of the town? Was it? It was Merrick.
Merrick, yes.
Merrick, where you had the massive, like, legit showdowns between protesters and police officers, or protesters and counter-protesters. Right. And such instances, while they usually do start out peacefully and they end peacefully, Long Island did a pretty good job of maintaining the peace with all the protests that happened, considering how much political animosity genuinely exists here.
Yes.
We did a pretty good job of keeping it together, but I'm glad that that's just a myth. I'm glad that's just a myth.
And, you know, I need to continue to thank those young people that were in the streets and protesting, because for them, you know, I don't think that we would even be at the table being able to talk about reform. So we have a lot to do in order to get change, you know, but I believe that the young people opened up that door for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would like to acknowledge a few of them. You have Shaniqua Levin and Ariana Levin, her daughter, who did an excellent job with their activism and advocacy this year. They hosted the big Juneteenth barbecue that sadly I couldn't attend due to COVID being at the height it was at the time, but it was beautiful. The showing was incredible. I saw videos, saw pictures. Also, Dan Lloyd of the
Minority
Millennials. He is incredible. He's definitely going to be on the show next season. So I hope you're listening to this episode, Dan. I'm going to talk to you in a little bit. And also, Amaru Jones, he's one of the one of the few young men that led a protest against the the owner of Tutto Pazzo or whatever it's called. And they
put
all the watermelons in front of his business because he decided racism on camera was okay and had the nerve to publish it and tried to walk back his apology. You know, no, sir.
Yeah,
caught yourself in 4K. You had the camera in your hand and you chose stupidity and violence with your words. So there's no like forgiveness or way you could walk that back. You said what you said. You're a grown adult and we're holding you accountable for doing what you did.
Right.
I'm just really proud of us young people who decided this year, like enough really is enough, because there's no reason why your generation, generations after you and generations before you have given us the playbook essentially, and we don't use it.
Right.
There's
well,
no
you all
reason
are
for it.
Rewriting some of the playbook, which needed to be done. So
indeed,
that's
indeed,
a good thing.
Indeed. And I hope I'm seeing a shift away from it, but I hope we also retire the saying, I'm not my ancestors, because most of us don't even have the gall or the nerve or the drive that our ancestors did.
Yeah, amen to that.
Some of us can't even choose not to shop at a certain store that's been like when Gucci had the whole racist sweater thing. Some people didn't even have the nerve or the self-control not to shop with Gucci as a form of boycott or protest. You really think you had, they wouldn't have even gone to the like to the diners and done a sit in. They weren't built for that. Most of us aren't built for that. And it is because the older generations did what they did. Some of them didn't make it, God rest their souls. And some of them were beaten, jailed, and all of that. They're the reason we're able to sit here so comfortably and even have the luxury of complacency, because that is really a luxury. If you're able to be complacent and you're still okay, that is a luxury that it's was true. Paid for by generations before you.
Absolutely. You're right on point.
Yeah. And I just really want to thank you for your continued work, because it is so necessary. And the fact that you uplift us and give us these platforms and you acknowledge what we do when we do it, that is, it means a whole lot. It means a whole lot.
Well, thank you. Thank
you. No problem at all. No problem at all. And with your involvement with the NAACP, there's an outreach program where you try and increase the amount of membership amongst younger people, correct?
Correct.
Awesome. And how can younger people get more involved with the NAACP?
Well, there's several ways, because, you know, my preference would be for them to join a local branch. You know, you can go on the NAACP national website or the New York State NAACP website and you can become a member. But what helps more is if you join a local branch, you know, right here on Long Island, and become active, you know, not just join to be a member, but be an active participant, because all of the branches need help and we need to have young people pushing us, you know, to do things differently, to make sure that we are reaching out from a social media and, you know, using all of the tools that all of you are so good at that I'm just learning. Like, I just learned Slack. I didn't even know about Slack. And, you know, so you need to teach us, you know, as well, and push the branches along to do things differently to make it better for all of you. And then, you know, work and learn and then take over. You know, I'm ready to pass my baton too. It's time.
Absolutely. That's another thing we need to keep at the forefront of our minds as young people, because people like you who've been doing it for as long as you have and doing it as well, you're open to mentoring, you're open to teaching, educating, and passing the baton. You're not one of the officials who's here holding on for dear life because you're scared of what will happen if the next generation takes it. Because a lot of the officials on Long Island truly are doing that.
Yeah, they're holding on. I don't want to hold on. I want to be able to pass the baton in a way and in a fashion that I can still be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to disappear.
Of course.
You know, I will always tell people what I would do if asked. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's time for us to do that, because if you pass it on too late, you know, then you're unable to be supportive, you know?
Exactly.
And I'm one that you have to know when it's time to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time. it's time.
Endings are very necessary part of life. You need to know when to bow out, when you've overstayed your welcome, or you've done
right.
all that you possibly could.
Right. Because, you know, think about it. You know, I know what I know.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You don't know what you don't know. And young people, you know, they know different things. So we need to combine that power and then, you know, let the young people go.
Indeed. The foresight right. of the older generation needs to meet the creative minds and the energy of
right.
the newer generation in order for any progress to be made.
Absolutely.
Because we're willing to run headfirst into anything, but we don't
yeah.
have the foresight to not run into a wall. You do.
That's right.
Because you've hit that wall before.
I've hit the wall, and let me be here to pull you back a little bit and say, okay, mm-hmm. maybe you don't want to do it this way. Maybe you do, but, you know, I tried this. Maybe you do that. I learned so much from my children, and I'm learning even more from my grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those that are in leadership positions and social justice organizations, just like, you know, Shanique was doing with her daughter. I mean, how powerful is that?
That's right? incredible. She hasn't even graduated yet. And
right,
she's
right.
already blazing.
Right.
Trailblazing.
You know, there are other examples, you know, Julia Fenster and her daughter, Avalon. You know, there are a lot of people who are successfully passing that torch. You know, I am inspired by my children and what it is that they do, you know, in the community. And I hope that my grandchildren, the three of them, you know, continue to give back to the community. But it's just like you said, you got to know when to go.
Truly, truly. And it is also very important that while we have all these different groups that are and individuals who are trailblazing, that we do it moving forward as a coalition.
Right.
It needs to be done in lockstep. We need to keep each other up to date because it takes a village. Long Island is only so big.
Yes.
In my time at Stony Brook University and just now being an adult maneuvering the world, I have met way too many people that know the same people that I know. This is a very, very, very small island, and Huntington is an even smaller town.
Absolutely.
So we need to understand that the interconnectedness we have on social media and through the web is existent in our communities.
Yes.
And we need to keep each other updated. And as we do so, we cannot be performative about our activism. That is something that I've seen in general politics with some of the officials who do hold office. They'll say one thing and they're just talking out of the side of their mouth.
Right.
Or they'll
right.
do something just for PR. And it's like, yeah, that sounded good, but you still haven't moved anything in your 4 years of tenure.
That's
about
it.
That legislation you said once upon a time. And I really want to encourage anybody stepping into public office to know that the people are going to check you on it. Especially our generation. Oh, my Lord.
Now,
you know the expression receipts, right? You know the expression to have the receipts?
That's
we always
right.
have them.
You always have them. The receipt. You know, and I try even now to have the receipts. And when I'm at a forum and I'm asking a question, trust and believe I know the answer already.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure that they answer the question out loud, you know, for everyone. Right? And, you know, accountability and transparency are key.
Yeah, paramount, especially in instances of public office and just local government. When it comes to local activism, how do you think young people now can begin to step into their purpose? Like if they've had even an inkling of getting involved, how would you advise they move forward? You started through the Candy Stripers and then you built out from there.
Right.
How do you think young people today can do it?
I think they have to first figure out what they're passionate about, because that passion is what's going to keep you included, your own passion. So if you're passionate about education, great. If you're passionate about voting rights, civil rights, criminal justice, the environment is big, you know, now.
Yeah.
Especially now. You know, public policy. There are so many organizations, programs, drives, initiatives around all of that. So you first have to figure out what's going to keep you motivated. Mm-hmm. And that always comes back to, what are you passionate about? So you don't want to just pick an organization for organization's sake.
Or to build your resume. Resume
or to build, nice, that's right.
Make sure you enjoy it as you're building said resume.
That's right. That's exactly right. You know, I rose through the ranks of Verizon, then the telephone company, because I decided that I wanted to learn something that no one else wanted to do. So I volunteered for all of the jobs that no one stuck their hand up and said, I'll do it. And it made me then the subject matter expert in that particular issue. And then once I learned that and mastered that, then it was time for me to move on to something else. And that's how you navigate. That's how I navigated up, up the ranks with just being the go-to person for a particular item. Wasn't sexy, but it worked.
That's true. That's right? True. And even in that, you become a jack of all trades. But from your experience, it sounds like you mastered most of the things you got involved in.
Yeah, you know, I worked for a fantastic company who gave me, you know, a great opportunity and took a chance, you know, on me. And I know they would, I hope they would say that I delivered for them. And that's then, nice. You know, once I got breast cancer and, you know, thank God I successfully beat that away so far.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah. Amen. Then it was time for me to figure out what I wanted to do next. And getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and driving into Manhattan was not on that.
Yeah,
bucket.
That's not ideal. Right. That is not ideal.
So, you know, I was there for 37 years. 37 years is, you know, is more than enough time to work anywhere.
Yeah.
And now I'm doing great work and doing equity training and inclusion, because that was also one of my passions and what I did for Verizon for many, many years. So I've come full circle again.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That's awesome. And people, y'all don't understand how incredible Tracy really is.
Thank you.
And I hope some of you have the blessing of actually meeting her and interacting with her one day, because it's just nothing but gems and knowledge and great times with her. She's truly that great.
Thank you.
Sweetheart. Even better than any article you've read about her.
Thank you.
No problem at all. No problem at all. You're welcome. And with you having worked at Verizon for 37 years, I think that's a trend that has changed over time, where you have people being more and more comfortable with spending just short stints and having much more truncated tenures at different jobs, because they either get into a spot, see that they don't enjoy it, either the pay is bad or they're not treated well, or they just straight up get bored and they have what is essentially the luxury of saying, I don't like it here, and just upping and leaving.
Right.
Do you think that has been to the detriment or to the benefit of the younger generations? Because like long-winded tenures are no longer like as common or something that is sought after.
I think it's fantastic because it, you know, you provide innovation. Mm. But the only caution that I would give to young people is to save your money, though. Because what happens is when you're in a company for a long period of time, you can join that company 401k plan.
Mm-hmm.
When you jump around a lot, you forget about that.
Yeah, you don't stick around long enough to get those benefits.
Right. So that is the only caution that I would and recommendation that I would give to young people is, you know, do whatever you can to build up, you know, your savings so that when you do get older, then you have your own money to pull from, especially because if you're not going to stay at a company for a long period of time and get that retirement, money, you know, the retiree money, because you've been jumping around, then it's critical that you save your own money.
That's so true. Try to stick around beyond just the probationary period and stick around long enough for where if you choose to leave, you have vacation time and sick days they can pay you for. Don't leave right. And then your last check is really your last check.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
And how old are your kids?
I have a 38, 40, mm-hmm. and 42.
Awesome. Awesome. What are some lessons they have taught you?
You know,
whether it's through their childhood or now as grown adults where they turn around, and they're like, mom, you were right. Or mom, this is what I've learned for myself.
You know, I think that they are much better risk takers. They're like their dad. You know, they will take that risk. They will be much more vocal, you know, much more demanding. And I think you need to have that. I think it's absolutely critical to have that drive and have that passion. And they also, you know, they'll always have that side gig, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not just about working 9 to 5. They want to have that side hustle, which is great, you know, whether it's cutting hair or, you know, making music or building their own companies. You know, they have that entrepreneurial spirit, which many people my age did not have. You know, I was happy with my 9 to 5 job. They're not happy with that. You know, they want to make sure that they're doing both.
And yeah, that's also a luxury. That's also a luxury to be able to add something to your 9 to 5. Some people can only afford to have a 9 to 5 because of responsibilities or lack of access to fields and different enterprises they could even get involved in.
That's right. You know, and they want to live, you know, they want to go places and see things and learn things. And, you know, they're not afraid to, you know, just on a Thursday decide, you know, tomorrow I'm leaving. I'll see you in a couple of days. And see
all that text. Oh, that's real nice.
You know, that's a good thing. Right. So, I mean, in my world, it would take me 3 or 4 months to plan to go away for a weekend.
Mm-hmm. Because there are so many things you have to set in place and make sure are in line. You can't just vacate your post because nobody else is going to hold it like you. You need to make sure that's all good.
That's right. That's right.
What are some lessons that they've turned around, that you've imparted on them and some knowledge you've given to them that they've turned around and said, mom, you were right?
You know, I hope it's that community service spirit. Mm-hmm. They give back a lot. And they, you know, my daughter is instilling that in my grandchildren as well. I hope I gave them that. You know, I hope my husband and I have instilled that in them. I believe that they have, because I see them helping out people and not looking for the thanks and just doing things quietly. So I hope that they have learned that piece of it, you know, from me. They're never going to knock on the door and say, okay, we learned this from you. You know, that they're not going to do that. and they don't have to, but they are actually doing the work. And that's what's important.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And that brings to mind just education in general. And seeing as you are part of the PTA and you're still active on not necessarily any school boards, but you're active with, say, Dave Bernardo, the South Huntington Union Free School District. What are some, whether it's a reform or some things you've seen change over the tenure of your relationships with these different school districts?
Yeah, so I have the benefit of working with several school districts on Long Island and just making sure that we're taking a look at curriculum. Mm-hmm. And policy and procedures that are in the schools and ensuring that there is equity. You know, we still have a lot of work to do. The great news is that the school districts, Western Suffolk, BOCES, you know, they want to do this work. They want to make sure that they are providing an equitable education and an equitable experience, you know, for all children and all families. And it takes work, you know, but I've been enjoying my work with them. And it's all about flexibility, you know, it's ensuring that, you know, the playbook can be altered to fit the needs of the students and families of today.
That's perfect. And one thing I've noticed is in every single one of your responses, it's none of it is scripted, but you've been in public service for so long that you speak very conclusively. You answer every question that's been fielded, and then you wrap it up in a pretty bow. And I'm like, I almost don't even have time for my next question because you just answered that so well. Normally there's
Get to the point, right?
It's perfect. That's definitely right. An important lesson. That's an important lesson, because if you don't get to the point and you waver too much, then they could take you to task on something you shouldn't have said, but you accidentally included.
When I get tired of hearing myself, then I know it's time for me to move on, right?
Indeed, indeed. And speaking of moving on, with the tenure you've had in all the different fields you've occupied, what is next? What would you say is next for you? What are you looking to either get involved in? Where are you looking to pass the baton?
Well, you know, I am currently, the governor appointed me as one of the commissioners for the Public Service Commission. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that is all about energy and reliable rates and climate change and making sure that we are doing what we can in order to reduce emissions. That's a lot. And it's great work that if we do it right, will impact many, many communities and especially communities of color. So I'll be doing that for the next 5 years. And I'm going to continue to do my equity and inclusion work with the school districts. It's a passion of mine. It's great work. I want to do things that are meaningful, mm-hmm. that can impact a lot of people, you know, over time, you know. So just, you know, you and I have talked about this before. One of the stats about having diverse teachers.
Yes, that is so important.
You know, and the fact that we have, as of 2017, there were 212,000 students on Long Island, K-12, that never had a Black teacher, ever.
Yep. Sad reality.
Yeah, 30% never had an Asian or a Latino, Latina teacher.
Yeah.
That's a big deal, you know, and it's not just a big deal for children of color, because, you know, we have role models within our communities, but it is just as important for white kids.
Yeah.
White students, no one should have to be in a school system never having any teachers of color. We're not in a monolithic world.
Yeah, and we're not a homogenous one either.
Right. You know, so it is a true benefit for all students. So if I can make progress, you know, on that in partnership with the school districts, that's great work.
That's beautiful. And how would you invite people my age and slightly older to the table? What would be your calling to them? Just so they know, because I personally know I'm in good hands with you in office, but how would you invite others who aren't familiar with you and are still weary of trusting any form of government? How would you invite them to the table to get more involved? Because sometimes it's often the people who are weary and completely disillusioned who really have the best ideas.
Right. You know what I think they have to do is, you know, jot down 3 to 5 questions of things that they've always wanted to ask, and then make some calls to your elected officials and see the responses that you get. Make the calls to the social justice organizations and see the responses that you get.
Absolutely.
First of all, see if they call you back. That's number one, right? And then, you know, guide your way based on those answers and find your way in. And volunteer and, you know, do what I did. Volunteer for something that maybe somebody else doesn't want to do and you know that you'll be good at, and find that niche and become that subject matter expert in that particular lane, and you'll navigate your way through.
That's very true. And to the listeners, if you're ever worried about something not existing and you question why things aren't getting done and you have done no research to find a group that might already be doing the thing you are worried about, because so often we throw our hands up and be like, nobody's doing this, this isn't getting done, but there exists a group. And I think it's very intellectually lazy of us and disrespectful to the advocacy groups that already exist in the fields we are questioning.
Right. So, and help, you know, because yes, you may, exactly. And maybe nobody is doing it. And maybe you can.
Exactly. Right. If it doesn't already exist, create it. And that's find it. People that align with your beliefs who are willing to do the work and to do it well. Because it's like kind of like when you're in the classroom and you have a question, but you choose not to raise your hand because you think like, oh no, nobody else has this question. No, you might be asking the question that four people in the classroom have.
That's right.
And if you don't ask it, the teacher's going to move on.
That's right. Have that courage.
Legislation is going to move on if you choose never to voice your opinion or raise your concerns. You need to do that because yours is not, your voice is part of a community, and it is part of one that might, for the most part, be silent and isn't willing to not even stick their neck out there, because you're not taking a risk in asking a question per se. But if you don't raise your concerns and voice your interests, nobody's ever going to think that's something interesting to begin with.
That's
and they're
it.
Never going to assess that or try to address those issues. So use your voice, advocate on your behalf, on behalf of others who aren't able to, whether they're able-bodied, a handicap, they're gender nondescript, part of the LGBTQIA plus community, cis hetero, whatever community, across all lines. Advocate for yourself, find others who are like-minded, find groups that are like-minded, and whoever is in your way or resistant, form a coalition and push against them. Take them to task, because these are public servants. They occupy public seats. They're meant to represent the public.
The public, right?
We keep the lights on with our taxes. They don't do their jobs without us as the community existing. So we need to act like it. We really need to act like it.
Amen.
And I don't want to have the last word. I don't like that.
That's fine. That's good. That's part of passing the baton. You should have the last word.
Ugh. I really do appreciate it. Now that's really full circle. Tracy, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on.
Took a little while to get this together, but both of us have been very busy. So
that's it. That's
perfectly
it.
Okay. I'd be more than happy to have you on again. This has been an honor, a blessing, and a privilege. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Love you, honey. Bye-bye.
No problem. Bye. Godspeed. Thank you for tuning in today. Your listenership and support are greatly appreciated. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to use the voice message feature on the Anchor app or message me on social media. You could be listening to anything in the world right now, but you're here listening to me, and I appreciate you. Until next time, this has been Across the Mic with Julio Taku. Godspeed.